Thanks for inviting me into your home. Long haul truck, RV, camper, taxi, your parents' basement, your loft, that greasy spoon just off the interstate, and your cabin in the woods. Welcome to Coast AM. I'm Richard Serrett, and tonight, this morning, we're coming to you live from Coast's Toronto, Canada affiliate, In-Depth Radio, News Talk 1010. Every decade or so, the wireless industry rolls out a new cellular communication standard that can transmit more data more quickly. Already under development is the next round called 5G, because it's the fifth major generation of these standards for encoding and transmitting data over radio waves. The first generation, retroactively called 1G, was a fully analog system for transmitting voice. In contrast, 2G phones transmitted voice and data digitally. Subsequent generations, 3G in 2000 and 4G in 2010, made technical improvements that brought data rates up from 200 kilobits per second to hundreds of megabits per second. Now, with 2020 fast approaching, 5G is expected to transmit 1 gigabit per second, and perhaps as many as 10 gigabits per second. What does it all mean? Is it safe? An associate professor of environmental studies will be here in the first half of Coast to Coast AM to discuss. In hours 3 and 4, a retired British police officer, who retired, in fact, to pursue his interest in uncovering the truth about UFOs, we'll talk about, among other things, his police reporting sightings of UFOs database. Perhaps the most credible of all witnesses, police men and women, reporting UFO sightings. He'll also discuss his new investigation into the Rendlesham Forest UFO incident and his new documentary on this subject, Capel Green. Welcome to the Audio Imaginarium. Come on in, weary traveler. Hang your cloak on a peg, grab a stool, and come warm yourself by the fire. There are stories to be told, and you are among friends. I'm Richard Serrett. This is Coast to Coast AM. Why don't you stay a while? Magda Havas is Associate Professor of Environmental and Resource Studies at Trent University here in Peterborough, Ontario, Canada, where she teaches and does research on the biological effects of environmental contaminants. Dr. Havas received her PhD from the University of Toronto, completed postdoctoral research at Cornell University, and taught at the University of Toronto before going to Trent University in Peterborough. Magda Havas, welcome back to Coast AM. How are you?
I'm well, Richard. Thank you.
It's been a while. How have you been? What's new?
Well, I've dealt with a few health issues like cancer, but apart from that, I'm good.
Oh, my. And you're on the rebound, are you?
I am.
Terrific. That's great to hear. We need you.
Thank you.
So, 5G, they're talking about rolling it out in 2020. I'm a bit of a Luddite. I do have a cell phone. In fact, I'm supposed to upgrade this weekend sometime to the next iteration. But why do we need 5G? What's wrong with 3G or 4G? Why do we need a 5G?
Well, I personally don't think we do need 5G, but what the industry will tell you, this is the telecom industry, is that people are requesting faster speeds for downloading videos, for example. And there's a number of manufacturers that want to have devices that have very rapid speeds for interconnectivity, and 5G will provide that. So that's what the industry tells us, that people are demanding higher speeds.
Will we notice a difference? Because it seems like we're talking about like milliseconds in terms of, you know, reducing, one of the big things you're talking about is reducing the delay. But we're talking about milliseconds. Will we even notice a difference?
You will if you're trying to download a video on your, you know, iPhone or your iPad. And if the video is high definition and it's a very, you know, large size, instead of taking minutes to download it, will just take a couple of seconds. So that's what, you know, the industry is pushing.
Now, they're saying that one of the big things about 5G is it's going to be able to accommodate the rather horrifying so-called Internet of Things. So I guess so that my refrigerator can speak to my toaster, which can talk to my, I don't know, my garage door opener. I don't really understand that, but...
Yeah, your refrigerator and toaster can talk without 5G, and indeed it doesn't need 5G to communicate. But if you're going to have something like a car, a driverless car, then that's going to require information processing much more quickly, and 4G won't do that kind of thing. So if you're looking at technology that really requires a lot of data with very fast download speeds, then the 4G probably isn't sufficient at this stage.
And the idea is that they're going to roll this out when? In 2020? It's coming at us like a freight train. Is that the idea?
It's coming at us like a freight train, but it's already being tested now. So there are a number of communities that are unfortunately being exposed to 5G as we speak. The rollout is scheduled for 2020, but there are some companies that are hoping it'll be sooner than that.
And who are the major or the main drivers behind this? We're hearing a lot about, for example, this Chinese company, Huawei. Who else?
Right. Well, in the United States, the Federal Communication is really pushing this forward. The previous head of the FCC was Tom Wheeler, and he was basically an industry insider who took over the FCC for a number of years. And he was very, very strongly supporting 5G and trying to get it out as quickly as possible. Now, there's been a lot of opposition to 5G from people who believe that this technology is dangerous. Even the 4G version is already dangerous. So going to 5G without any kind of long-term biological testing seems really stupid to those individuals. But Tom Wheeler, he's been, you know, interviewed, he's given a number of press conference interviews, and he doesn't believe it needs to be tested. He believes that we should just go ahead and everything will you know, happen in its normal sequence. And he really believes that the United States needs to have this rapid deployment so that they can maintain their competitive advantage globally. The problem is that I personally believe that 5G is going to be harmful to the best of my understanding of it. And to roll it out and expose the entire planet to this radiation just doesn't make any sense to me without the proper testing.
I do want to get to some of the claims about health, deleterious health effects and so forth, but I just want to understand, you know, what is coming our way. So will this require... Like a major retrofit in terms of the, let's say, the infrastructure? Or are they going to have to replace cell towers? What are we going to see sort of on the ground when 5G arrives?
Well, they won't have to replace cell towers because 5G and 4G are going to coexist. So we'll still be using 4G technology. Indeed, we're still using 3G technology in some parts of the world. And for certain things, so 4G and 5G will coincide, but 5G requires very different infrastructure. So it's going to have a massive build out of antennas because 5G, it stands for fifth generation, and the claims that for this technology to be fast, it has to be at a higher frequency. And so the frequency range that they're talking about are called millimeter waves. So these are wavelengths that have anywhere from 1 to, you know, 10 millimeters in size. That's the length of the wave. And in frequency, we're talking about something that is in the gigahertz range between 30 and 300 gigahertz. So there's two different ways of talking about it, talking about the size of the wave or the frequency of the wave. These require very different types of antennas. And one of the things we know about these higher frequencies is that they don't penetrate buildings as well, and they're absorbed by things like water and trees. And so instead of having one antenna, you know, in a 1 kilometer radius or something, they're going to have 10 antennas, according to the industry, every few houses. So, you know, depending on how closely the homes are together, and the antennas are going to have to be line of sight, which means that if you're at one antenna, you can see the next antenna. There won't be anything in between them. So we're really talking about a massive, massive infrastructure of antennas that are going to go in every community in the United States. Some of the radiation is actually going to be coming from outer space through satellite transmission. But basically, you're going to have an antenna in front of your home or, you know, certainly within 3 to 5 homes in your neighborhood. And that means you're going to be exposed to radiation on a virtually constant basis as well from the 5G in addition to the 4G radiation.
So, in other words, we have smaller antennas placed much closer together, each emitting bursts of radio frequency radiation, although at levels much lower than, let's say, today's 4G towers, right?
Not, well, possibly lower than today's 4G towers. There's a lot of confusion out there as to exactly which frequencies they're going to be using and how powerful they need to be. And some of the information, you know, that's available on the internet is very, very misleading, including some of what I've just told you, the fact that it doesn't penetrate buildings very effectively. There have been technicians that are going out now testing 5G technology, and they're finding that the radiation actually transmits for much longer distances than they've theoretically calculated. And so, you know, these antennas might be actually much more powerful than we realize.
So it's going to be much harder to avoid then.
You won't be able to avoid it. You just
right.
simply won't be able to avoid it.
So in other words, it doesn't matter if I have a cell phone. If I'm using my old analog dial-up phone, I'm still going to be subjected to or exposed to this radio frequency radiation.
That's correct.
Now, if I have a 5G phone, is that going to intensify my exposure? Or at this point, I mean, we're swimming in it. Does it make any difference?
I think it does make a difference. And you're right, we are swimming in it right now. Whether you have a cell phone or not is almost irrelevant for exposure. So if you're in a urban environment, for example, a city, where there are antennas communicating with other people's cell phones, you're getting secondhand exposure just like you would with secondhand smoke. And that's going to happen with 5G as well. The difference is if you're a smoker, your exposure is going to be that much higher because your cell phone is emitting the radiation when it sends a signal. And so because you're so close to your cell phone, you're going to get that signal as well as the one coming from the antenna.
Now, back in 2011, the World Health Organization, their International Agency for Research on Cancer, classified RFR, radio frequency radiation, as a potential 2B carcinogen. What does that mean, a potential 2B carcinogen?
They classified it as a possible 2B carcinogen, and what that means is they had evidence from studies with humans, they're called epidemiological studies, where people who use cell phones had a greater risk of developing certain types of tumors associated with the head. The two types of tumors that IARC, the World Health Organization agency, recognized and said the evidence was sufficient was for gliomas, which is a type of a brain tumor, and acoustic neuromas, which is a type of a tumor that is in the nerve leading to the ear. The acoustic neuroma is non-malignant. The glioma is malignant. And glioma, blastoma multiforme is one of the most virulent types of brain tumors, and very few people survive who have them. And what the study showed back, prior to 2011 when they made this classification, was that there was an increased risk. It was higher for kids. If you started using a cell phone before the age of 20, your risk increased quite dramatically. And people had to use it for at least 10 years in order to observe this tumor, because brain tumors have a latency period that's normally longer than 10 years. So the fact that it was showing up after 10 years was quite disturbing. And the brain tumor tended to happen on the same side of your head where you held your cell phone. So if you held your cell phone to your left ear, you'd get a tumor in your left temporal lobe, for example. And that was sufficient. But what was lacking back then was large-scale animal studies that were showing, increased cancers with exposure. That has since changed. Just this past year in 2018, the National Toxicology Program in the United States presented their, released their final peer-reviewed report, and they found that the glioma and a type of schwannoma, which was the acoustic neuroma, that it appeared in the heart. So they found an increase in gliomas in these rats, and they found an increase in a tumor of the heart, simply because the rats were exposed. The entire body was exposed, not just the head. So we're not finding heart tumors in people, but it's the same type of tumor cell that was found in the ear. So the fact that these two tumor types that were just, discovered in the rats also occurred in the humans was really a cause for concern. And since that time, there's an institute in Italy called the Ramazzini Institute, and they did a very similar study to the NTP study and found virtually the same thing. So we now have replication of two very large, multi-million dollar studies showing that rats exposed to cell phones developed at least two types of tumors that we're, really concerned about in humans as well.
So are you saying there's no longer any debate about this, that it is, that radio frequency radiation, I mean, the World Health Organization says it's a potential to be carcinogen, but if I'm hearing you correctly, there's no longer any debate.
There's no longer any debate, except if you bring scientists who work for the industry together with scientists who are independently funded. They will disagree because the industry really doesn't want to admit that their product is causing cancer. But the scientific evidence clearly shows that this is no longer a 2B carcinogen. It's definitely a 1 or possibly a 2A carcinogen, which is a probable carcinogen. I'm convinced it's a one classified as a one carcinogen, which is carcinogenic to humans.
We hear a lot about the blood-brain barrier permeability, for example.
Right.
Talk to me about that and the importance of that with relation to 5G.
Well, there were studies done, decades ago that showed that if you held a cell phone to your head, that you increased the permeability of this barrier that's around the brain. It's called the blood-brain barrier. The brain is protected by the body, by this barrier, from the rest of the body. So if you have things like toxic mercury floating around in your body, that blood-brain barrier will keep a lot of that mercury out of your brain. When you expose the brain to microwave radiation at the same frequencies that we use in cell phones, it causes that barrier to liquefy, and it puts holes in it, basically. And so things that shouldn't get into your brain actually can penetrate into the brain. And this has been found, repeatedly. And consequently, doctors are now beginning to use microwave exposure of the brain to get drugs into the brain that, because it's hard to get drugs into the brain as well. And so they're actually using it to help drugs penetrate this barrier. So it's being used therapeutically under very controlled conditions. So the difference between that is you want the drug to get into the brain to do, whatever it does. But with some of the other chemicals in your body, you don't want them to get into the brain. That's why you have the blood-brain barrier. So if you have mercury in your body, most of us do from fillings or eating fish or, and some people are occupationally exposed, mercury is a neurotoxin. And if it can penetrate that blood-brain barrier, get into your brain, it can cause all sorts of neurological damage. Once it starts killing the nerve cells don't regenerate very quickly at all, especially in the brain. And it can then lead to all sorts of things like dementia and Alzheimer's disease and other kinds of neurological disorders that are becoming increasingly prevalent in our society.
What about DNA damage?
Well, one of the things that a lot of physicists will tell you is that There's a difference between ionizing and non-ionizing radiation. And ionizing radiation refers to things like X-rays, for example. We know that they have enough energy to break chemical bonds, and so they can damage DNA. And if they can damage DNA, then they can potentially damage other kinds of, you know, chemical bonds and contribute to cancer.
Okay, Dr. Havas, pardon the interruption. I've got to take a quick time out. We'll come back and delve further into the serious health concerns surrounding 5G wireless networks. Speaking of Egypt, archaeologists in that country excavating south of Cairo have discovered 50 mummies in a tomb dating back to the Ptolemaic era. The identities of the mummies, 12 of which were children, remain unknown. But the mummification method indicates the individuals were of significant status. Some of the mummies were placed in stone or wooden sarcophagi, and others wrapped in linen, then laid within one of four different burial chambers. Additional artifacts were also uncovered, including pottery and papyrus. And you can read more and see more up the, at the carousel, Highlights Carousel, up at Coast to Coast AM, where our webmaster tonight, Sean Latisore, has posted that story and many other tantalizing tidbits. Say, have you checked out ParanormalDate.com yet? It's absolutely free to search and send messages. There are thousands of members in your area, and it's optimized for dating your cell phone, dating on your cell phone, ParanormalDate.com. Remember, you are not alone. Back to more of my conversation with Dr. Magda Havas as we discuss the dangers of 5G wireless networks right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm Richard Serrett, coming to you from Coast Toronto, Canada affiliate, In-Depth Radio, News Talk 1010. Say hello on Twitter, at Richard Serrett. At Richard Serrett, S-Y, because I love you, R-E-double-T. Magda Havas is with us, Associate Professor of Environmental and Resource Studies at Trent University, just down the road in Peterborough, Ontario. Before the break, Magda, you were talking about the difference between ionizing and non-ionizing radiation. And this is important because this is what the skeptics, if you will, argue. And they say why LTE mobile networks are safe because they're non-ionizing. So let's just sort of go back a little bit and drill down on again, the difference between non-ionizing and ionizing and why you say even non-ionizing can be dangerous.
Okay. Well, as I said just before the break, that ionizing radiation, like X-rays, I think everyone recognizes how harmful they are. There's enough energy in the radiation to break chemical bonds, and consequently, this can cause damage to DNA and it can cause cancer. And that's one of the ways that people do get cancer. With non-ionizing radiation, there isn't enough energy to break chemical bonds, and so for the longest time, I think, physicists and doctors just believed it can't cause cancer. It doesn't have the energy, it can't cause cancer. But cancer can be caused in a multiple, you know, ways. It's not just one size fits all. And it turns out that when people are exposed to their cell phone, so radio frequency radiation is non-ionizing, so is electromagnetic fields from power lines and electricity. Both of them are non-ionizing, and both have been implicated in cancer. Both are currently classified as class 2B carcinogens, possibly carcinogenic. And it turns out that with the non-ionizing radiation, what tends to happen is that during regular metabolic activity in our body, we produce something called free radicals. These are sort of, in a sense, they're sort of waste products, and they have to be neutralized by our body. And when you're exposed to non-ionizing radiation or your cell phone or your Wi-Fi, for example, it interferes with your ability to produce antioxidants, which is the way that we neutralize free radicals. And so there's a buildup of free radicals, and free radicals are known to cause cancer and a lot of other adverse health effects. And so much of what we're seeing with people, whether it's damage to DNA, whether it's damage to their sperm, which is another consequence of this type of radiation, or whether it's symptoms of electrical hypersensitivity, we believe it's due to this indirect effect of your body being unable to repair the damage that's done naturally.
So can 5G or 4G or 3G, in other words, radio frequency radiation, can it age us prematurely?
Totally. And you know, there's something called electrical hypersensitivity, and a lot of people are suffering from it and don't even realize it. Their symptoms vary from, you know, inability to sleep for, you know, and get restful sleep during the night, chronic fatigue, chronic pain, difficulty thinking, remembering, that sort of thing. Anxiety, depression are two of the common symptoms of electrical hypersensitivity. And I actually call this rapid aging syndrome, because what is happening is that exposure, constant exposure to this radiation puts stress on your body. And that's been documented through stress protein analysis and other types of biophysical effects. And when your body's under a lot of stress and it can't repair things properly, then you begin to age. And so a lot of the people who experience electrohypersensitivity because of their exposure to microwave radiation, what they often tell me is, well, I'm just getting older, and it's common for older people to need less sleep, or, you know, older people are normally tired and older people normally have difficulty thinking. But when these individuals go into an electromagnetically clean environment and spend, you know, a few days to a few weeks there, their symptoms disappear. And because of that, it's not real aging. It's something that's being induced by our environment, and I think it's being induced by exposure to radio frequency and microwave radiation.
Does it impair cognitive ability? For example, are we seeing a lowering of IQs?
I don't know if we're actually seeing a lowering of IQs, but it does impair cognitive ability in the sense that people can't remember things that they've just done. You know, they go to the fridge and they can't remember what they need to take out of the fridge, or they go shopping and they can't go unless there's a list that they take with them because they can't remember things. So memory, short-term memory, is definitely impaired. And very often people who have this illness, they tell me that they have something called foggy brain. They just can't think as clearly as they normally can. So they're aware of their cognitive impairment. I don't think it necessarily will show up on an IQ test, although it could. I don't know of any studies that have been done on that. But certainly it interferes with thinking clearly and with remembering short term.
I can hear the skeptics, though, Magda, saying, well, this is anecdotal, but, you know, where is the, I mean, is it, have there been, for example, in PubMed studies, long-term studies on, let's say, cognitive ability and cell phone use?
Yeah, there have been studies, not so much with people, but certainly with laboratory animals, where they expose, you know, rats or mice to different frequencies for different lengths of time, and they simply don't function as well as the other animals, the control animals that aren't exposed. So when it comes to, you know, trying to figure out where the food is in a maze, it takes them much longer to do that. So there are quite a few studies now that are showing there's definitely cognitive impairment. There's physiological evidence of this as well. There's effects on our hormones, and there's effects on our nerves as well that's been shown both in human and animal studies, and that can interfere with our cognitive ability if you start having changes in your hormonal level. And we notice that in, you know, teenagers that are going through changes, as well as people in midlife who are going through hormonal changes.
Are there any indications that radio frequency radiation can make people more aggressive?
Interesting you should say that. Some of the anxiety is a form of aggression. You know, people, because they're just not feeling comfortable, they react in different ways. So if you're prone to be aggressive, it can make you more aggressive. But this reminds me of a study we did. We actually looked at bee populations, which isn't, you know, human health. But we were concerned about, you know, the bees collapsing, the colony collapse disorder. And did an experiment where we took some beehives and exposed them to cell phone radiation. So we took out, you know, we had a cell phone and a Wi-Fi router and put them near one of the beehives, and the bees became incredibly aggressive. They swarmed out of that beehive and they attacked, you know, everyone that was around, whereas normally they're really quite placid, you know, insects. They were attacking birds that were flying by. They were attacking a dog. And so it definitely made the bees more aggressive. And there's evidence with birds as well. Birds that put their nests near cell phone antennas, they become very aggressive. And consequently, they don't take care of their young as well. And so there are fewer eggs that hatch to, successfully because of the parental aggression. So there's definitely evidence in the animal kingdom and the insect kingdom that aggression is one of the symptoms of exposure to microwave radiation.
Now, we don't have, a representative from Ericsson or Nokia or Huawei here, so I have to sort of ask the questions in their stead. So let me play devil's advocate here. If we look at, let's say, cellular subscriptions over the last, 20, 30 years, and we look at the number of or the brain cancer rates over that period, they might say, well, brain cancer rates have remained pretty much unchanged over the last four decades as cellular subscriptions have gone, have grown substantially higher. First of all, is that true? And how would you respond?
Okay, first of all, it's not true. There have been a number of studies now, one done in California where they looked at three different cancer registries and found that there's an increase in cancers of the glioblastoma multiforme. So this is one of the most aggressive forms of brain tumors. And that particular type of brain tumor is increasing over time from the mid-1990s to about 2000, and I can't remember the exact date when the study ended, but about 2010 or something like that. It's been increasing in incidence in the population in California in the temporal lobe and the frontal lobe, and that's basically the two lobes of your brain. The temporal lobe is right above your temple, and the frontal lobe is in front of your, your forehead. In those two parts of the brain, this particular type of brain tumor has been increasing steadily in the California population, according to all three cancer registries. And the same thing has been found in the United Kingdom and in England, for example. If you look at just where the brain tumor is and the type of brain tumor, this one type of brain tumor is actually increasing in incidence in the population. If you look at other tumors or tumors in other parts of the brain, you either get a straight line, so there's no change, or you get a downward trend. So when you include all brain tumors and all parts of the brain, then the evidence isn't there. It's masked. It's hidden by, the tumors that are actually decreasing. But this one particular type, which is the one that's been identified in epidemiological studies and in the National Toxicology Program with rats, so we definitely know that this type of tumor is on the rise. So that statement, coming from a telecom industry is simply inaccurate.
What's the problem here, that we have a revolving door between, let's say, the FCC or the, well, this wouldn't be covered by the FDA, but the FCC and industry? Is that one of the problems we're facing?
We have the fox guarding the hen house, basically. Tom Wheeler, who was the head of the Cellular Telecom and Internet Association, CTIA, became head of the FCC. And he was a really strong promoter of 5G technology. And so when you have the head of the FCC, promoting his industry colleagues so that they can actually make, billions of dollars on this technology, then you've got a real problem because there's no one representing the public in this particular case. Also, the FCC isn't known for its health expertise. It's a federal communication commission that's there to, make sure that there aren't going to be interferences with different parts of the spectrum being sold to different providers. And they're not really there with expertise on what causes biological effects or health effects.
How do other countries, or how are other countries dealing with 5G or even just RFR in general? For example, I remember reading several years ago that the European Parliament had voted to ban the use of wireless internet in schools.
Right. First of all, countries have very different guidelines. So the guidelines vary orders of magnitude in different countries, with the U.S., you know, and Canada, unfortunately, being two of the worst countries, along with, you know, countries like Japan and Great Britain. Our guideline, the FCC guideline for Wi-Fi frequency, for example, is 1,000 microwatts per centimeter squared. So just consider it 1,000 units. It doesn't really matter what the units are right now. In Russia and in the former, you know, European Eastern Bloc countries, the guideline is 10. So it's 100 times lower than the ones we have in the United States. And in some other countries, like Salzburg, Austria, for example, they have a guideline that's even lower than that. It's 0.1 and 0.01 and 0.001, depending on whether you're outside, inside, or in your bedroom. So the lowest level should be in your bedroom, the second lowest level should be in your home, and the third lowest level should be outside. But their guideline is, you know, 1,000th or 10,000th of what the guideline is in North America. And the reason for that is that the North American guideline, the one the FCC has, is based on heating. The original assumption when microwaves were first used in radar was that the only biological effect you could have was heating. And they actually capitalized on the heating effects of microwaves with the microwave oven, you know, for the home and heating food, for example. And they haven't changed that concept, despite the fact that we've got literally tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of documents showing adverse biological effects that are non-thermal, that occur well below the guidelines, that have nothing whatsoever to do with heating. But for some reason, and I think it's to protect the, you know, telecom industry, those guidelines have not been improved over the years. And so people are not being protected in these countries.
We're heading into a break here very shortly, but let me just get a short answer now, and maybe we can expand on this after the break. And we'll also open up the phone lines after the break with Dr. Magda Havas. And that is, I mean, they're talking about 5G and the Internet of all things as ushering in like some sort of, you know, fourth industrial revolution. It seems like there's just no stopping it at this point. I mean, is that a fair assessment? It's coming whether we want it or not.
I agree with you. I think it's coming whether we want it or not. But there are a lot of things that we can do, still use the technology and benefit from it, but make it safe at the same time. And I think that's not being considered right now.
All right. We'll delve into that when we come back. And as I say, we will open up the phones for questions and comments for Dr. Magda Havas, Associate Professor of Environmental Studies at Trent University in Peterborough, Ontario, Canada.